Can we call you Boof?
Boof.
Boof. We could say that. Can we make it? Can we make it a verb? Stop boofing.
No, you are a boof. No, you are a boof. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the American Israelite Podcast and the Let There Be Light Podcast. And I'm one of your hosts, Netanel Ted Deutsch, and I'm here with my special guest hosts, Pam and Pam. So this is going to be the Pam and Pam show.
All right. Well, hello, everyone.
Hello,
and we'll introduce yourselves. Well, who are you and why the hell are you here?
I don't know. Ted asked me to be here. That's why I'm here.
Well, we need to know more about you, Pam. So tell us.
Yeah, who are you and why? Who are you? And who, what, when, where, and why?
Oh, so where do I start? I was born. No.
Where were you born?
You're both Cincinnatians.
Yeah, both Cincinnati, born and raised. My family grew up here and from Wyoming and Sycamore area. I work at the Jewish Federation and I oversee the marketing for Federation and Jewish Family Service and JVS Career Services.
Wow. Well, welcome. And I am Pam Sakes, the Joan Rivers of the American Israelite Newspaper Podcast. And for those who were too young to know that reference, Joan Rivers used to be the permanent guest host on the Tonight Show with Johnny Carson for many, many, many years. So I kind of see myself as that person who fills in either for Ted or for Julie when one of them is away. And Julie Babs Burnson, McGillicuddy, I don't even know all the names, happens to be away with her family on vacation. So we hope you're having a great time, Julie. And I'm sitting in for her today.
And you forgot to mention the positive thing that look to your left. What did you get your gift today?
Oh, yeah.
Your lovely parting gift from the wonderful show.
I got a pelican cart. I've been wanting a pelican cart.
I want to see it put together, though.
It's right there.
Over there.
Oh.
And so by the window, Ted has set up a pelican cart. It says for sale, $75.
Well, see, I'm going to take them outside and sell them, but I'm waiting until we sell the MG.
But these pelican carts are the
really
coolest
cool.
thing.
They're really cool.
Yeah, they're very flexible, and like it's kind of like a wheelbarrow. It's so unwieldy.
I want one now.
Yeah.
Let's see what we can do.
Uh-oh.
All right. So today is Wednesday, July 14th, and it is the 5th of Av, and the paper comes out tomorrow on Thursday, July 15th, the 6th of Av. But this is a major milestone in the history of the American Israelite newspaper. Wait, hold on. Okay,
thank you.
So this issue begins the 168th year of the American Israelite.
Now you do the plus.
Okay, yeah, hold on, right. Oh, my God.
I'm still a neophyte here at the podcast.
You just like
sound booth. I was never, I was a psychology and a political science major in college. I was never working the soundboard.
It's exciting.
Okay. And hence, this is why the American Israelite is, yeah, he studied psychology and what else?
Political science.
Okay. And then he ends up being the publisher of a Jewish newspaper. Makes perfect sense. Okay.
All right. So so our first story today on the front page is Governor Mike DeWine has appointed Sarah Weiss from the Holocaust and Humanities Center to the Holocaust and Genocide Memorial and Education Commission. And I guess that will start in June 30th. Her term begins June 30th, which already started. It's July. And ending June 29th of 2024.
It's a huge accomplishment for Sarah, really, because she had the vision to establish this commission. And the fact that DeWine called it out as his unwavering commitment, Sarah's unwavering commitment to the Holocaust education, which we all have felt her presence. And what she's been able to do
right.
with Holocaust education. I mean, the fact that we are the only city in America that has a Holocaust educational center in a public museum.
It's amazing. Mm-hmm. Well, and Sarah is brilliant and amazing, and we're so lucky to have her in our community.
So our next top story is Independence Day Parade and Barbecue in Golf Manor, which was covered by Steve Hirschberg and Carol Hutchinson. And this was on Sunday, July 4th at Golf in Golf Manor, and they had a parade. And it was you wanted to point out that Gary, the FC Cincinnati mascot, was there.
Yeah, and I wish Carol and Steve would have gotten a picture of that. I really wanted to see. I had to look him up. He's really cute.
Is he?
Yeah.
What is he, like a soccer ball?
It's like a – he's like an animal. It looks like a or a wolf or something, but he's blue and – orange. I like the colors.
Yeah. The logo that they use is a lion. So is he a lion?
He's a lion.
He's a lion. He's an orange and blue lion. So everybody had a good time.
But can I comment really quick? This JCRC meeting. It says it was founded. In quotes.
1939.
Yeah. So around the crisis of extremism. Right.
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 I mean, we haven't come any further. In all these years. I mean, we're now at such a, critical point with extremism in our country and in our world. It's just really sad. And when I see this, that was in 1939, you would think that we would have maybe, grown and evolved.
What's interesting about the work of JCRC is that a lot of across the nation, JCRCs have been defunded because it's been hidden, right? Like, we didn't think it was there anymore. We thought we were over it. So
right.
We didn't think we had to invest so much. But as we know, in the last 4 years, it's just escalated, and especially with the most recent crisis in Israel, with the conflict in Israel, even more so. The ADL had reported a spike in
incidents,
hate crimes,
and extremist incidents.
Yeah. So it hit home for me. Recently at Wyoming, my own school district.
Right.
My daughter, there was a child, a high school student, walking down the hall saying, "Hail Hitler."
Oy.
And made a post on social media with a swastika sign on it. She was really upset, and her friends reached out. And, thankful because of the work of JCRC, our administration is working with our JCRC in educational and with the child. But in the past year, there have been 27 incidents of anti-Semitic
in Cincinnati.
In Cincinnati, our JCRC has helped with, and one Wyoming, or my own school district, is working on it. We had been dealing at the same time with Walnut Hills and Mason. It's out there, and because of the work of the JCRC, the education that's available to help our community educate.
I'm wondering if we could. Make those more public if the Israelite could help in making more public. Because unless you're directly know about those incidents, I wouldn't even know that there was 27 incidents in Cincinnati. And I'd like the Jewish community of Cincinnati to know that. I mean, we should all know that that's going on. I wouldn't know that.
And I just wanted to thank Rana Schneider, too, for her leadership over the last 2 years on the JCRC, leading as the president of JCRC board. And starting with Jackie's vision, No Bigotry and No Sanction, that program that there's an event coming up that you'll hear more about in Israelite, I'm sure, because we'll have an ad about democracy as a social project. Another thing they talked about at the annual meeting was the Leaders in Light program, which is like a first of its kind in the nation, where it's going to be a 9-month fellowship really program with civic leaders in our community, led by Sherry Gorin Slavin and Kevin Albridge, the opinion editor from the Inquirer, that they're going to be working to educate 26 participants in civic and faith backgrounds to teach about really the hate and extremisms and how to fight against it.
Well, first of all, how do we identify it, and then how do we deal with it? The main thing is, how do we deal with it? Because it's happening, but how do we react to it and how do we deal with it is really kind of a crux of what we need to do.
And what's incredible it's going to be about this program is it's 26 participants who are going to go through this training, and then we're going to give them funding to create programming to fight against hate and extremism with their own communities, within their own civic work, outside the Jewish community. And the idea is that train leaders to run with it and figure out how to take it back to their own communities.
Okay.
Well, and again, it's like from the musical South Pacific, where there's a song called You Have to Be Carefully Taught. And it really stems from, just generation after generation of living in a family and, having parents or a parent or grandparents who are teaching you to hate. And it's really easy, even with just anything in a family, it's hard to break away, no matter what it is, from that kind of thing. And so trying to address it as a Jewish community, I mean, there's so many layers.
Right.
But you got to try, you know?
Okay.
It's great.
All right, so then we have page four, Camp Chabad hosts a pop-up Jewish art show in over the Rhine, and there was a it highlights this Jewish artist who is Yitzhak Muli, and he was at the Rheingeist Brewery in Over the Rhine on Thursday, May 6th, and they had 25 guests, and you want to talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, just I find it interesting how much in the last, I would say, few years we've seen more Jewish cultural arts and food events, in particular Ish Festival that's coming up in September with the launch of the Jewish Cincinnati Bicentennial,
right,
which the Israelite is a founding partner of.
Yep.
Just a lot of exciting, it's exciting to bring arts and cultural and food opportunities with to Cincinnati and the Jewish cultural space.
Okay. All right. And in the calendar we've got, well, this Saturday night is Erev Tish B'Av, and I actually, as you can both, I'm growing a beard because I'm in mourning for the 9 days, and it's getting to the point where it's starting to get itchy.
You know that?
And, you know, I really, you know, I'm not a beard guy, you know, I'm like a clean-shaven guy. And when my mom died, and I had to grow a beard for like 30 days, and my dad died, and then my aunt, you know, so every time I have to like grow a beard, and I just, you know, it's like I got like a raccoon on my face. It's like, you know, I got to get it off.
You know that little poem, just, Fuzzy Wuzzy Was a Bear? You know that one?
Yeah. Yeah.
Fuzzy Wuzzy Had No Hair.
Yeah.
Now it's like, that's nice.
Nah. So I get to shave. I have to grow it until like, well, Sunday is Tish B'Av, which is the day of mourning for the first temple, the second temple, the beginning of the Holocaust. A lot of stuff, bad stuff happened on Tish B'Av in the Jewish history.
Yeah, you've talked about that a couple of times.
Yeah.
It'd be interesting to do a deep dive into that.
We should, probably. So we sit on low chairs and, you know, say prayers all day.
Like a Shiva.
It is like a Shiva, mm-hmm. Yeah. But it's coming off Monday morning.
Yeah, it is itching. Now it's going to itch you more.
Yeah, now he's only going to think about it. Yeah. He's going to be like a little monkey.
I am a little monkey. I'm a
Teddy
monkey.
Boy.
I'm a monkey. Aww, man. All right, so Monday, July 20th is a cultural journey into the Western Galilee through Jewish National Fund online from 9 to 10 p.m. And you wanted to comment on that and something that was
just
of interest.
Just again, more cultural. I love seeing the cultural events and programming. Mm-hmm.
Very cool. On page, then we have from Haver to CEO.
Yeah, from Alon. He's a former shaliach.
Right.
Actually, Haverim, I'm sorry.
Haver, me, Israel.
Yeah.
You know, what I loved was his story of how he even got involved in rock climbing was because of Sharon Spiegel's son, you know, and how that relationship really transformed his life and
right.
how his relationships that he built while he was in Cincinnati really created a trajectory of his life. I find that really interesting. And, you know, one of his mentors that he calls out was for Felice Blink Thomas, whose yard site
right.
on was just July 12th.
Which is, Monday. Monday was her yard site.
Yeah.
Monday the 12th.
Phyllis Binnick Thomas. Uh-huh.
Right, right.
Thank you, yeah.
We all remember, and we're very fond of, too. She was
mm-hmm.
a
lovely.
Special person.
Yes.
Yeah, she did a lot. But talking about the Haverim, in the last year, we did not
right.
have a Shaliach or any Haverim because of budget cuts, because we wanted to reinvest those dollars back into our community agencies during COVID. But
right.
now, this year, we're bringing them back. So we have a new Shaliach starting
okay.
Yardin. He starts August 16th.
Okay.
And two new Haverim, Lior, Binyamin, and Nitzin. Back, I'll get these names better.
Say that three times fast.
Their pronouns are she and he, and Yarden's pronoun is a he. Yeah, and they both, all three of them start in August. So excited to have them back
okay.
around.
Very cool. See, it's, you know, you have the Pam and Pam show, and you learn all kinds of things you didn't even know you were going to learn about.
You
How do you like that?
I love it. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so then we move on to the Yiddish column by Dr. Jordan Finken. And he talks about pastrami and other Romanian Yiddish delicacies. And I can relate to this because I am in love with this. There's a place in Chicago called Romanian Kosher. Mm-hmm. Have you ever been there or heard about it? But one of the few places in America that you can get sliced roast beef. You can get corned beef. You can get pastrami. You can get pepper beef. You can get, you know, every other kind of beef. But roast beef is really hard to find. And you can get it at the Romanian in Chicago. And so we have a connection because Yossi, our copy editor, drives up there quite a bit for his job when he's not copy editing. He does a great job. And he brings me back kosher Romanian sliced
roast beef.
Roast beef.
You got to do it when Pam and Pam come back.
Pam and Pam yeah. show.
Hello.
All right. So on to national news.
Mm-hmm.
And this is kind of sad. So Florida officials have now told families that there are no more survivors in Surfside. And so I think they've, you know, that was a, it's a major Jewish community right
yes.
there.
Yeah.
And it's all been coming out about all the people from our the Jewish community that have passed away.
My mother-in-law's friend, you know, she has a place in Florida. One of her friends that lives in Boynton Beach near her lost both her sons. One son lived there. The other son was there visiting. And isn't that just tragic? It's so sad. Anyway.
The women's philanthropy director at the Federation in Miami-Dade worked there, was in the building when it happened.
Oh, my.
She was on the lower floor, so she was fine. But
oh, she got out.
Thank God.
Whoa.
God.
Okay.
Wow.
And more, you know, anti-Semitism. Gravestones were vandalized at a Jewish cemetery in Baltimore recently.
That's just awful. And, you know, it's kind of, it's a very stark difference to the Israelites cover last week
where we had
the cleaning of the monuments at our Jewish cemeteries.
Chestnut Street, which is like, I think, the original.
Which yeah. unfortunately, we were talking about how also at the early June, JTA also talked about cemeteries being vandalized in Romania and Ukraine, too.
So anti-Semitism is ongoing, and we have to be vigilant, and we have to respond, you know, and stand up for our rights, basically. We need to continue to do that.
Well, and we also, if you look at page 8, where it talks about this Auschwitz Museum article, where there's been the tweets about the vaccines and comparing them to Nazi Germany, you know.
It's just ridiculous.
Yeah, yeah. It's got to stop with all this business.
Yeah.
I am not that powerful.
So an influential Jewish MLB union chief will finally get his recognition in the Hall of Fame on Rosh Hashanah, and that would be Marvin Miller. So Marvin Miller totally revolutionized. He was the attorney for the players and the players union. This is, what, in the 70s, I think? And maybe in the 60s. It was either 60s or 70s. And he totally revolutionized Major League Baseball and changed Major League Baseball because now the players, you know, make X amount of dollars and all that kind of stuff. And he went and set up, you know, retirement and all this kind of stuff. So he was a very revolutionary, right, revolutionary and evolutionary Jewish figure in America.
I mean, yeah, well, and there's not that many Jews in baseball. We have I have to bring up Euclid.
Right, right. So this we found interesting, which was in Israel, that snakes at a kiddush celebrating baby pythons with a traditional ceremony. And you wanted to talk a little bit about that.
I just thought the cute, I mean, Cuddles.
Cuddles, the python?
Mm-hmm. I would not name it's just such a great name for a python, right?
Cuddles.
Cuddles. And a kiddush. I mean, it just reminds me of all your Adith kiddushes that you love.
Yes, yes. I do love kiddush. It's one of my favorite things in the whole world is kiddush.
Because you like that wine?
No, I like the food and the wine. All right, so once a month we put in from the page, page 18, which is we do ads from, you know, historical ads. And so we have some ads this week that are really kind of interesting. And you wanted to do the perspiring women ad.
And this is just—it's perfect.
Just so crazy.
I mean, it's just so.
Well, it's hot
Alexia
out. It's like
powder.
85.
This is—I have to read the first paragraph.
Okay.
Alexia powder and medicated dress shield. Love that. Will positively remove the odor caused by perspiration. In addition, will protect the dress. Unsolicited testimonials of its curative powers prove its wonderful qualities.
So you can get one.
I didn't know my deodorant could do all this.
One box of powder and shield for $1. This is from 1896. This is probably before Secret was invented.
Way before.
Way before. But this is powder. It was like powder. Look at her. She's like all sexy. Her arm is exposed.
Okay. All right. Yeah. And then down 1921, I like kind of like this one. There's a Chevrolet for $625. Wow. They had down there. That's really cool.
That is the bargain.
I wonder if that car was around still, how much it would cost now.
For the antique, right now, automobiles are so hard to get. Like people, I heard somebody the other day that went to go buy a new car, and they said they had X amount of dollars for their car, but another $10,000 because we can't get the inventory in. Yeah, so they're like marking up stuff because you can't get cars.
Well, and my son and his wife were going to go on a honeymoon, and they couldn't get any kind of car or transportation once they got there. So they decided to put it off until, you know, things got better because. You know, you want to travel around, and people said, oh, get an Uber or get a you know, Lyft. But the problem is because no one can get a car, you can't get an Uber or a Lyft. Some people are saying just buy a car when you get out there and then sell it back, you know, a used car. But you can't, you know, so that's really been an issue. You know, it's affecting everything.
Right.
It's a shame. They had to postpone their wedding for a year. Now they have to put off the honeymoon because of this. It's the so stupid.
Right. All right. So you wanted to mention the ad down below on the right.
I do. Okay. I would like to say Mazel Tov to Donna Mayerson, Dr. Donna Mayerson, who is being honored by the Hearing, Speech, and Deaf Center on September 23rd. My husband and I will be going to that. But Donna does amazing work in our community. And, I'm just really, you know, happy for her that she's being recognized for this, among many other things, over the past many years. So Mazel Tov to her.
Okay. All right. So in the letters of the editor, we have a very controversial letter of the editor this week. And people should read it because there'll be a lot of people writing in about this one.
Yeah, nothing else to say.
I have nothing else.
Well, when it starts with "to my woke friends." Mm-hmm.
Thank you for reading our paper.
Yes, thank you for reading our paper. Yeah, we love it. We love you.
Who? Right. Who's you?
Everybody. You too. You
whoever,
included.
Whoever. Even you should send in your, even if it's
that's
not
right.
Popular,
right, you know,
you should have a voice.
Right. You should have, you should have a voice. I agree with you totally.
No, you do. You always publish stuff. Even when
I do.
I was running Access and somebody wrote the most horrible thing.
Yeah.
I'm calling him up. I said, "Ted, why are you publishing this?" He goes, "Oh, because you know it'll spark conversation."
Right.
I'm like, "Thanks, buddy."
Just call me Citizen Kane.
Yeah, Citizen Ted. Okay.
All right. So on to From the Pages, and I have to do a correction on From the Pages. So last week on the in the Thursday, July 8th issue in this 100 years ago, there was an editor's note. And Carol kind of made a mistake. So I have to point out, this was submitted in by Jim Friedman, Director of Gift Planning and Endowments at the Jewish Federation of Cincinnati. So if everybody reads that, I need to point out that Isaac Meyerwise Temple is not K.K. Bene Israel. That would be Rockdale Temple, but instead K.K. Bene Yeshurun. And Rabbi Wise was never the rabbi of Rockdale Temple, although, as you can see from below, that he was offered the job shortly after arriving at Bene Yeshurun and turned it down. Rabbi Philipson was the rabbi of Rockdale Temple for 50 years, starting in 1888, and he was actually in the first graduating class of HUC and personally recruited by Wise, Rabbi Wise, to come as a student when he was just 13. Rabbi Max Lilienthal served as the rabbi of Rockdale for much of the time that Wise was the rabbi of Bene Yeshurun, which was Wise Temple. So we just need to correct that.
Thank you, Jim Friedman.
Thank you, Jim Friedman. All right. So in the beginning, and this is a continuation of from Samuel Brule, and so we'll continue on his discussion of his in the beginning. A continuation of the description of the Shabbos Aid Society, the second Jewish charitable institution in Cincinnati. Its object is to afford relief to anyone suffering under misfortune or otherwise. This laudable institution has at this date only 70 members. The amount of subscription is not in any way equal to its outlay. To meet this deficiency, an annual dinner takes place at Hanukkah. That's a typo. In each year, when a large party usually assembles, on which occasion liberal sums of money are invariably donated for tzedakah, and communities are then appointed whose duty it is to inquire who may want relief with full power to give instant help to the deserving. And so this July 28th, 1854. Now, today, this would be the Jewish Federation of Cincinnati. And we actually have Pam Geller here, who is the marketing director of the Jewish Federation of Cincinnati. So here, hold on.
Yeah.
Take a bow. Take a bow, Pam.
Okay, I'm bowing.
All right. So we also, from 125, we have the ladies column, and you wanted to read Pam Sakes. You want to read 125?
Well, I actually don't want to read it all the way because it's blah, blah, but I'll tell you. I'll
it's blah, blah.
It's basically, speaking of things, she's basically like saying that, you know, what happened to the art of conversation when you go to a party? Like, people just are supposed to come talk and, you know, converse. And instead, all the parties back 125 years ago were starting to become these themed activity type parties. She calls them, let's see, I'm going to read this part. She says that they are book parties, fan tan parties, which are some sort of like Chinese gambling game, verbarium parties, and ledger domain party. I don't even know how to say that, which I think is a sleight of hand sort of magic type of things, geography parties, millinery parties, and even ancient and ghastly phantom parties. Okay, so basically people, instead of just inviting people talking over to have a conversation, they were doing these kinds of things. So she was not happy at all about that. Hmm. And that's kind of interesting.
Right. Probably learned from some themes. These are some interesting. I wonder what how did you say that? Ledger domain?
Yeah. It's a sleight of hand type of magic.
Like a magic party.
You know, what I think if this was the kind of the kind of conversation she has in these columns, maybe people needed to find something more interesting than, just the weather or whatever, you know. So in a way, we do that too sometimes at parties and events where we, you know, have special activities that, you know, because not everybody's a great conversationalist. Sometimes I can't stand standing at a party with a drink in my hand, go, you know, can't wait to get away from that guy who won't shut up or
right
whatever
now,
else.
We just want to come back together. We're just like, you don't even have to have a theme right now.
Right,
we just
right.
want to come. We just want to talk.
Exactly. Now, exactly. It's very different. So, anyway. Okay.
All right. 75 years ago.
So, Dr. Helen, somebody help me.
Iglauer.
Iglauer Glick.
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 Glick, who, with her son Charles, was en route to Palestine to visit her husband. Dr. Nelson Glick was halted in New York last week by the grounding of Trans World Airlines.
Yeah, TWA.
Yeah. Aircraft. They were able to obtain transportation on a later plane. Dr. Nelson Glick is director of the American School of Oriental Research in Jerusalem. Well, Dr. Glick was instrumental in becoming the president of HUC
right,
in Cincinnati.
Right.
So
he was an eminent archaeologist, and he also did a lot of stuff, a lot of digging in Israel. So he was excavating.
Wasn't there something I just read about an excavation in Israel? Wasn't that in the paper?
Maybe earlier.
Talking about excavation, they found something
right
in Israel. Where was that?
Was
rare
it
book of
Probably
Judges.
Okay.
Oh, that's
rare
cool.
of inscription found.
Oh, really?
A rare 3,100-year-old inscription was discovered during the excavations in southern Israel.
Huh.
Yeah.
That's
fascinating.
Well, also, you know, we just went to Aspen for a wedding.
Right.
And I believe in the spirit of the Israelites 75 years ago, you should publish, you know, my airplane story and dilemma. I mean, although I didn't
I didn't know there was a dilemma. Well, now we're going to find out about the dilemma that you had.
Well, look at this. I mean, we had to hear this was published in the Israelite that they were grounded and had to get another flight. No wonder they had to have these kind of parties. I mean, if that was the most interesting thing that people had to talk about, hello. Well, no, I literally, our connection was, we had 30 minutes once we got to Chicago to get our connection to Aspen.
Right.
And originally it was going to land, you know, in the same terminal, but no, it somehow got derailed and we ended up literally running almost a mile and a half. I had to take my shoes off and we ran because there's not that many flights to Aspen. We would have missed parts of the wedding that we were going to go to. And we were running through the airport with our carry-ons and God only knows we look like, anyway, thank we goodness, made it.
Not that many people. You were able to run because it wasn't that full?
Right. No, it was just the four of us from that flight. But the plane was full. But, you know, so, of course, we make it by the skin of their teeth. And they had our boarding passes waiting for us. And they're like, we're just about to close the doors. We get on the plane. You know, you're breathing heavy. You finally make it. Thank God. And then you sit on the runway for an hour and a half.
Oh.
Yeah.
One of those.
So anyway, I'm sorry to Helen and Nelson Glick for their bad luck.
Son Charles.
But if
Charles.
They only knew.
I find it interesting what they did put on the pages. Right,
right. Right. I mean, yeah. It's funny. Like, this one's vacationing here, and this one's now back in town.
They talked a lot about that
very mundane stuff, some of the stuff they were. Yeah.
But if you think about it now, I can just text my friends and say I'm back. And, you know, this was the way they communicated to everybody. Right, right.
How times have changed.
That's right.
Well, now it would be like on Facebook or Instagram or, you know, email or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, things have changed.
Just a little.
Okay, so we're going to move on to bad joke of the week.
Now do your thing, yeah.
Ba-dum-bum.
Keep going.
Yes. Or the ba-dum-bump, which is actually pathetic.
All right. You ready?
Yes.
This is from the Encyclopedia of Jewish Humor from Biblical Times to the Modern Age, compiled and edited by Henry D. Spaulding. All right.
Okay, for the record, we've talked about how we need to get you a new joke book.
Yeah, for thank sure.
You. Thank you. Thank you, boss lady. Boss lady Pam and the other boss lady Pam.
Okay, let's hear it.
All right, you ready?
Yeah.
The story is told of a rabbi who is not only an eminent scholar and a deeply pious man, but also a successful businessman. Because of his many good works, his unending acts of charity, and his lively sense of humor, he was much beloved in the community. But then calamity struck. The rabbi was wiped out completely, financially ruined. His students, however, remained fiercely loyal. Thinking to cheer him up, a delegation went to his house, believing they would find him broken in spirit and in need of a few friendly words. But to their amazement, they found him serenely engrossed in his studies. "Rabbi," they exclaimed, "why are you so calm? You are a poor man now. Don't you ever worry?" "Of course I do," the rabbi answered. "But I thank God for blessing me with a quick mind. You see, the worrying that others do in a month takes me only about half an hour."
Oh my God, okay, that didn't even garner a chuckle.
That's the really bad joke of the week. Not even a tee hee.
No, you got to change that headline. Wait, I have to ask you though, Ted.
Yes.
I request that since Pam is here, I have a little thing called Pam's Peeve Corner, and now
Pam's
it's the Pam and Pam, but I would like to suggest a theme, which I'm sure you can appreciate, for Pam's Peeve Corner, and that is Pam's Public Potty Peeve Corner.
Potty Peeve Corner.
That's right.
Better finish. It's going to be good.
And the P-E-E-V-E Corner.
Hi, everyone. I know I'm out of town, but we did an interview last week with Jody Salters, and we are going to edit today's podcast. So now, for your listening pleasure, please enjoy this special guest interview with Jody Salters about interior design and interior decorating. So we have a great interview today. We are going to be interviewing Jody Frimmer Salters, and she is an interior designer.
Right.
And we're going to talk about the trends in interior design, and also the difference between design and decorating, as well as, you know, some things that we have around here, the Israelite, we may want to talk about as far as the decorating here in this amazing facility.
Are you getting on my decorating abilities here at the paper? It's not really not much to decorate. It's just an office. We work here, okay?
Let's welcome Jody first before we get into bickering.
We want to welcome her, yes.
So welcome, Jody.
Hi, thank you.
So give us a quick background. Give us a little bit about your bio, your Cincinnati roots.
Who are you?
Yeah, who are you?
Who am I?
And how did we get to you?
How did you get to me? Well, I grew up in Cincinnati, in North Avondale, actually, and went to Yavne Day School growing up until sixth grade, then went to Walnut Hills High School, moved to Amberley when I was around 12 or 13, went to Ohio University for college.
Oh, my goodness.
Guess who?
You know who's a fellow Bobcat?
Ted Deutsch.
That's nice. I love hearing that. Mm-hmm. I was 2000. And, and from there, moved to New York City and was there for a couple years doing store design and then moved back to Cincinnati.
All right, so we have a lot of commonalities. I grew up in North Avondale. We lived at 1019 Lenox Place. Where did you guys live?
We were on Burton Woods Lane.
Okay. And my first job was sold the Post and Time Star. So you guys might have been on my delivery route for when I was a newspaper boy. And so then, right? And then I went to Walnut Hills, and on to OU. And actually, my neighbor that lives right next to me is a 1980 graduate, 2000 graduate. He lives right, Eric Deal, the guy that lives right next to me in Amberley.
Wow!
Oh my gosh, yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah.
I don't know if my life is common or if we just have a lot in common. I don't know.
Well, obviously, you had a strong Jewish education. You went to Yavne, which is now Rockhorn. And I know you and I talked about this, but you had a bat mitzvah. So you told me that from pictures, you remember what you wore. So tell us a little bit about your bat mitzvah, what you remember, and what you wore for your bat mitzvah.
Yeah, I was telling you, I don't remember a ton because it was so long ago. But I do remember the outfit I wore, mostly because I just tried it on a year ago.
Oh, and it still fits?
It still fit.
Wow.
And I tried it on, actually, when it was my daughter's bat mitzvah, I surprised her and put it on for the Friday night dinner. And it was hilarious. But it was silver sequins, asymmetrical front with a multi-layered white lower half. So it was very 90s. Very 90s.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure your daughter got a big kick out of that.
It was like, so that was like the perfect thing for the disco ball. You remember the disco ball with the thing, and you could stand in front of that and kind of like shake your booty, and then it would be the light would like be bouncing off of you kind of a thing.
So
I basically looked like a disco ball. Yeah.
So you were growing up, what did you aspire to become?
You know, if I'm being totally honest, when I was younger, I didn't know. I didn't know what I wanted to become. I just wanted to have fun, and I was going to try different things. And I knew, you know, my dad was a doctor, and my mom was an interior designer, and I was on my own path, I felt, and whatever, you know, was going to fall in my lap, I was just really open while I was growing up. I was into a lot of different things. It wasn't really until I got to college and I took an interior design class and it just felt right. I said, this is what I'm supposed to be doing. I just, for the first time in my life, it kind of clicked and it just took off from there. So, I joined the interior architecture program and it just went from there.
Jody, you started to tell us about your degree. So your degree has a technical name to it. And also, could you tell us the difference between interior design and interior decorating, what the two interior jobs are?
Yeah. So my degree is in interior architecture, which really is interior design. But the training then was, you know, not just being able to put colors and fabrics and that together, but really understanding space and the functionality of space and how spaces work together, basically the architecture of the interior. And that is more what I do, which is more interior design. So it's really considering the house as a whole, and we're doing floor plans, you know, we're doing elevations, we're doing, you know, every single detail of the home interior, and honestly, a lot of time the exterior too. But another part of that is interior decorating, which is, you know, making it look pretty after. So, you know, at doing the tchotchkes and doing the art and, you know, kind of making the space look lived in and pretty. So I would say interior decorating is a part of interior design.
Okay.
So do you get into the, any, you're not, you're like, you don't really go into the engineering of it and stuff like, so that's the next level, I guess, would be the engineering in terms of the house and all that kind of stuff.
Exactly. So yeah. Everything but the engineering part, we do.
Okay.
Yep.
And who and what are your influences when you're designing something? Who and what have been your influences? Do you have someone that you follow the style of?
No, I would not say that, actually. I don't think there's like a person, but I definitely, I mean, I feel like my influences come from kind of all the world that's around me. So like architecture, nature, art, family, all of those things inspire what I do. But I would say like the most influence comes really per project from the clients themselves. Mm-hmm. Because I really like for each space to be reflective of the person I'm designing for. So it's not, you know, I might feel inspired, but it's really coming from them. Like I feed off their energy to create the space. Mm-hmm.
So do they usually have like a vision of what they want, or do they, you kind of like work through what the vision is and then, you know, you kind of work with that and, you know, develop it from there?
It's, you know, it's all over the place and everyone's really different. And I think that's kind of the beauty of design. Some people come in and they really know what they want. They don't know how to make it happen, but they know what they want. They have a feel, they have like a style. And some people don't know what they want and they don't know how to articulate what they want. So it's really my job to get in their heads and figure out, you know, how do they live? What's going to make them feel good? And that's, I think, what's so fun about it. So is it's challenging, and I really get to know my clients well.
So you're kind of like an interior design psychologist.
I would say yes.
Yeah.
She probably has to use a lot of
right. And that encompasses a lot, too.
She has to work with them and their personalities and get to know them. And work.
Yeah.
So can you give us, like, three current trends that are going on right now in interior design?
All right. One, I would say color. I think color is kind of making a comeback. There was definitely like a lot of years where like all white was in. Not that that's not in anymore, because I think there's a place for everything, but people are starting to want to see more color, especially like coming out of the pandemic and just getting some brightness and pops of color that makes them feel happy.
Mm-hmm.
I would say that's one. Another one is nature and natural materials. So more use of wood and stone and things, bringing the outside in, plants, things like that. And then my third is that I can think of is wallpaper.
Oh, I love wallpaper.
It's huge. Yeah. Bold, a long time.
Yeah. The wallpaper was like, everybody got rid of all.
Right.
Well, we built
our house.
Right.
The architects, I said, I want a wallpaper in the kitchen because no one's wallpapering. So the only room I wallpapered was my kitchen, but I love wallpaper. I love wallpaper. It's so much fun. So like Rockworn Academy from, you know, Yavna that you went to, they once won this competition for best commercial restrooms. Have you ever designed any restrooms for office spaces? And what are the trends for office space restrooms?
I have. I did not know that about Rockworn. That's amazing. Huh. I would say, you know, it's commercial is a whole different beast than residential. You know, residential, you really are is so personal. Mm-hmm. And commercial, it's more to the masses. So trend-wise, I would just say function. So having materials and surfaces that all coordinate really well together and feel nice and feel up to date, and really the function of a commercial space, especially a bathroom, is what matters the most, I would say. Not that it doesn't interior in a residential interior, but commercially, I would say the trend is just make it all feel really nice and welcoming.
Yeah.
Let me, and this is kind of an optional question, but what do these things cost, and how do you balance, clients' wants and needs and the costs of doing all this stuff, and how do you reach a happy medium? That's kind of what I'm asking. Like, how do you get to where they're happy and then
how does the expenses work when you hire an interior designer? How much it costs, but how does it work?
Okay.
Like, do you mean how does it work? Like, how
when
are
someone
our
hires
fees
you?
Right.
Yeah.
Right,
yeah.
Right,
when someone hires an interior designer, what should they expect?
Yeah.
Not what they should expect to pay, but how does the financial plans work?
Right, right.
So I think, I know we work a certain way, and we have a lot of amazing lines that we carry. We go to the furniture market twice a year and go to different places and, open up with all the companies that we think are really nice. We sit in all the furniture and, really do our research. And we get amazing pricing on a lot of lines that we buy through. And we usually, if our clients are purchasing through us, we don't invoice for our design time.
Okay.
That being said, sometimes people like to just have our expertise. And in those kind of cases, either we come up with a flat fee or we just do time. Mm. It really depends on the project, because everyone's needs are so different that we try to just work with people to make sure that, they're comfortable and happy and we're comfortable and happy. And, we just try to make it work so everyone is in a good place. But typically it is, either an hourly fee, or if you're purchasing through us, we just invoice for the items, and they're usually discounted off of retail. So it's a win-win.
So let me ask you another one, Ted's dumb questions. There's designer clothing. Is there designer furniture and designer, household stuff? I mean, like designer designs, stuff? Okay. Ralph Lauren or stuff like that,
Yes, okay, there totally is. And fabrics and all that kind of thing. There definitely is. I don't know if it's necessarily as label oriented as clothing is. I think it does tend to be more of a quality thing with furniture versus a label thing. And that might be a little bit with clothing too. It is a little bit higher quality when you get a designer label. But there's definitely levels, and that goes back into budgets. There's so many different levels of furniture. So that's part of our job too, is if there's a budget involved, what lines are we looking at? Mm. If there's a high budget, we can look at, many lines. If we have a lower budget, we kind of have to select from lower budget lines to pick from, so we can meet everyone's budget.
That's a good question. Yeah. I would never have known that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, we're going to wrap this up with one final question. So here in the Israelite office, we have a single restroom that sits in the middle of the building. It has walls that reach about, I'd say, 4/5 to the ceiling, so there's a giant gap.
Uh-huh.
And Ted has jerry-rigged a radio to play classical music when the lights go on.
WGUC, it's like...
Yeah, WGUC, great classic music. So this is, as we would say, a furcacta or a crappy design. Is this an example of Jewish ingenuity to put a radio on? And is there any way that you could make some professional suggestions on how we can have a restroom here that isn't so humiliating to use?
It's not humiliating to use.
That's brilliant.
What are you doing in there?
Everyone doesn't have to hear everyone else tinkle.
Well, I know, but that's why we put the radio on.
It doesn't
there,
cover so it all, I can tell you.
I'm going to turn it up louder then. It's going to get louder.
Oh my
god! Some rock music.
You That's have to so see funny. This. You wouldn't believe it.
You have to stop by sometime and give us some
have to see it.
Professional advice.
So I'm guessing, I mean, first of all, that's amazing. I love that the music was hooked up, because at least that's a start.
I know. See, I'm start. Creative. I'm the creative type here, you know?
I can tell. I was trying to, tell me about the ceiling. Is the ceiling a drop ceiling?
No, or
is
it drywall?
It's metal roof.
No, it's an old metal roof that was the original roof that they put another roof on top of.
So it's rusting and it's...
No, it's not.
It's not smooth
rusting.
At all.
It's actually insulated and it really does really well with the heating and the
cooling. What do you call this right above your head? That's not rust?
Oh, well, you know, it's a little old, but it's not rusty. See, I believe in the Neil Young thing. It's better to rust than to fade away, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's full of old rust.
Jody, you're going to have to come here and give Ted, you know, the bare minimum budget and see if you can't fix this bathroom.
Well, we might just need to go up towards the ceiling more with a little bit more...
drywall.
Yeah, drywall, yeah.
Plywood even.
I didn't do it. They put this was in here when we got here. What are you busting my chops for?
I would definitely have to see the space, but a few ideas would be... Number one, you could do some either extend drywall up.
Yeah.
Number two, you could put, you know, even if it's high enough, you could do some glass panels that are, you know, a sound barrier. Number three, you could drop a ceiling in there. and or just keep with the music.
Yeah, I like the music. I'm just going to change it to like the
heavy
Fox.
Rock and roll.
Heavy rock, yeah.
Heavy
you
rock
know, some
and
headbanger
roll.
Headbanger music, so you know you won't really care.
Yeah, you'll want to get out of there just as fast.
Yes, you will.
Well, Jody, this has been a delight and an honor. We really appreciate your time and your expertise in getting to know you better. And this will be a great addition to our podcast. And we want to thank you.
Oh, great. Thank you. It's really
remember,
nice talking to you guys.
Just remember, go Bobcats.
Yep, for sure.
Thank you, Jody.
All right,
it was lovely talking to you.
Thank
Bye-bye.
You.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Again, I know I'm out of town, but Ted and I had this wonderful interview last week that we've recorded. It was a great interview. I hope you enjoyed it. And now back to the regular podcast.
So, okay, pet peeves. I don't like it when I go into a restaurant and 9 times out of 10, the damn hook on the back of the door is off or broken. Okay, now what am I supposed to do with my purse? Put it on my lap? I mean, I don't want to put it on the floor. And, you know, I'm always like cussing and then trying to find another. Anyway, I don't understand why they can't keep a hook on the back of a door. Okay, speaking of hooks, the JCC, I pounded on them for a year and they finally did this, but, and at least they did it. But speaking of purses in public bathrooms, where are you supposed to put your purse when you wash your hands? And especially if I have one, like my family calls mine my suitcase because it has everything, you know, but the kitchen sink in it. But honestly, it's really hard to wash your hands when you got this big purse hanging off your arm. And, you know, even if you have shopping bags or something, I don't understand how hard it is to put an effing hook underneath a sink or somewhere on the counter. You can, and the JCC did do that.
Okay, well, here at the American Israelite, when you use...
Thank you, Pam.
Yeah, you're very welcome. What, Ted?
Say at the American Israelite, when you go in the restroom, you can use the door handle for your hook.
Oh,
well, she's
thanks.
She's using the chair right now.
What a guy.
I have mine on the floor. She must be like...
well...
There
you go. Okay, well, yeah, you can use a door handle, but typically on bathroom stalls, there's not a handle. There's just that little, you know, yucky thing. But so there's that.
Yes.
You know, and also, I don't like... I know that men are the one that install the bathrooms because the toilet paper box where the toilet paper comes out, sometimes it's like right on your knee. Like, you know, do you know what I mean,
Pam?
Yeah,
I do. Yeah.
She does. And I mean, it's pretty pathetic. Now, I will say one thing. They did a study of the sinks in public bathrooms, men's rooms versus women's rooms.
Right.
And they found that the women's rooms in the sink area is at least 75% dirtier and germier than in the men's room.
Really?
Yeah, it's because the men don't use the sinks.
Oh, that's
So, I use a but, every time.
I'm sure you do.
And then even more so because I'm always washing my hands.
Okay, but okay, well, so you're one of the 25%, Ted.
Yes, I am.
Which is very good.
And there's times, you know, when I, that's to continue that, there are times when I'm in a, like a public restroom and I, you know, use the restroom and then I go wash my hands and then you'll see somebody like come in, use the restroom and then leave.
Ugh.
And I'm like,
seriously, dude?
That, yeah.
And especially that dude, men.
That guy didn't wash his hands. I'm thinking, he didn't wash it. I'm not touching that door handle after, you know, he just left.
Oh, I don't touch door handles.
Right. I don't. Uh-uh. Yeah, I use the paper towel. Right.
Yeah, the paper towel.
I wonder with COVID now if we'll see differences in how many people wash their hands. If there's more men because, maybe. I mean.
But wouldn't you think men would be more compelled to wash their hands considering 100%. Women can get by without touching certain things, but guys pretty much can't?
That's why I wanted to go.
I know, right? Right. But I mean, isn't that gross? So men, hear our cry. You have to, you know.
Wash your hands when you're in there, young man.
After COVid, can we all take a lesson that we should all
be washing your hands constantly.
Well, and you should push the elevator button with your knuckle.
Oh, right, right.
You should, or your elbow.
I use my tie.
Yeah, there you go. I use my jacket or and on escalators, I use my wrist.
Right.
Like, I don't put my hand on it.
Right.
But I've always done that, even before COVID.
You're germaphobic. Oh, you're germaphobic.
I'm a little bit.
You and Danielle Minson, too, you should have a conversation about that.
They're germaphobes.
Yeah. Well, and Danielle's, you know, I don't want to say it germaphobe, but I'm just going to say, she sounds like Pam.
Averse to germs.
Well, you know what it is.
Averse to germs.
When my kids were little, I was constantly sick and on antibiotics. I mean, just a million times when they were little, and I realized, you know, I started getting better about teaching them to do some of these things and myself, and I gotta say, since I've been doing that, I have, knock on wood or whatever, that's not Jewish, but you know what I mean,
the knock on wood comes from knock on the
cross, right? Okay, so whatever it is, poo 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 to that, and
poo, poo,
poo, poo poo poo, that's Jewish. Anyway, the point is, since I've been a little bit more careful about all that stuff, I have been healthier. And that's why my first pet peeve from Pam's Peeve Corner was talking about those baristas putting their hand on my coffee cup lid, which really upsets me. But isn't it true?
I was surprised they said that they were like,
yeah, they kind of.
We're inventing. We're in the process. So we don't want to talk about it too much because we're in the process of inventing that.
Yeah, no. Don't say another word. Okay. We. It's my idea, and Ted's getting
in on
it.
I'm going to help you.
Okay. Well, where's the money?
Idea.
Put up the cash.
I'll give you some cash.
Okay.
I just feel like
there
should be some type of arch, like Pam Peeves Corner. I want to know more. Like maybe replace that with, instead of having the bad joke of the week.
Pam's Peeve Corner.
Yeah, there you go. Oh my God, people.
Well, you provide. But what about this, Pam?
What do you have any pet peeves?
I love living through you. Oh, okay. Some really good. Once.
Well, and I have lists and lists, but do you have any peeves you'd like to share with us today?
I'll own yours. With you.
Okay. Well, I think that I do speak for Pam's Everywhere and people everywhere when I talk about my pet peeves because,
I back them up.
Thank you very much. All right.
So Iris has a column this week and she talks about doing some knitting.
Knit one, pearl two. Yeah. You know that one, you can always knit one, pearl two.
Yeah.
Hey, other team,
but honestly,
we hate you.
Okay, so
the
takeaway, though, is really not about the knitting, right?
Okay.
It's about trying new things, stepping outside your comfort zone, recognizing that you're uncomfortable, still doing it, and having a learning experience along the way.
And that is important. And thank you, Pam, for that.
Pam, thank you, Pam.
Thank you, Pam,
thank you, Pam.
That's right.
Okay. We're at death notices.
Oh, boy.
So, I will read. So, we also have two obits this week. Susan Rissa Okrent-Solomon and Robert Lewis Lappin. Check those out. And the death notices this week are Ida Koroshevsky, knee tratap, age 89, July 13th, 2021, 4 of 5781.
Donald Lee Lampert, age 72, July 9th, 2021, 1 of 5781.
Okay, Jeffrey Greenberg, age 67, July 9th, 2021, the 29th of Tammuz, 5781.
Judge Norbert Nadel, age 82, July 9th, 2021, 19 Tammuz, 5781. He was a big friend of the American Israelite. I knew him well. it was kind of shocking that he passed away. So it's kind of been a tough week.
Hmm. Maxwell, age 92, July 6, 2021, 26, Tammuz, 5781.
Samuel Eli Ransohoff, age 28, very sad. Mm-hmm. July 6, 2021, the 26th of Tammuz, 5781.
All right. And finishing up, so on the back cover, we are congratulating the American Israelite on its 168th year of publication. And so this issue is the first issue of volume 168.
Isn't the Israelite the oldest Jewish paper
in America?
Yeah.
Oldest Jewish weekly.
In America. Now, there's older.
Weekly? Is English it weekly. By weekly?
Yeah, English Jewish weekly. Now, there's one older, and that is the Jewish Times of London.
But it no longer is published.
No, it's stopped, and then someone bought it, and they started back up again.
So you're the longest continuous.
Continuous.
Oh, that's like Federation. I'm used to that.
And I also, while we're giving Mazel Tov, so Mazel Tov to the American Israelite,
thank
and
you.
We are very fortunate to have such a fine, upstanding paper in our community that helps connect us all. I wanted to also give a Mazel Tov, if I could, to my niece Kyle Goldhoff Frank, who just got married this past weekend in Aspen, Colorado, to a wonderful guy named Graham Frank, who we adore, and he's got an amazing family who we got to know, many of whom are involved in their Jewish communities all over the country, many who have other jobs, of course, too. But we're really thrilled to welcome them to our extended family, and Mazel Tov to the two of them on their wedding. What?
You took the Kiddush cup with you.
Yeah, the Budnick cup.
Okay, tell them a little bit about that. So it's been the family.
Since I think 1864, so they are now the 19th wedding.
Right.
That has sipped from the cup,
right.
And among probably 40 or 50, but when you add the bar and bat mitzvahs and the baby namings and so on and so forth. So, yes, and then they passed it on right after they used it, rinsed it out, and put it back in the box and gave it to my nephew Todd Schoenfeld, who's getting married in October in Austin, Texas. So we do that at each simcha. Hand it to the next person.
That's wonderful. Fantastic
It's great.
Tradition.
Well, yeah. It's
wonderful.
Thank you. And it was just fun because it was the first time we've been away since COVID before COVID. And it was a little bit weird to be in airports and on airplanes and around lots of people. But it was so great to just get away and be at a hotel and lay at the pool and just, do all those fun vacation-y things. So,
right.
Yeah.
It's fantastic. Yeah. All right. So I want to wrap it up and say thank you to our Pam and Pam guests, Pam Geller.
Pam Squared.
Pam Squared. Pam Geller,
but
from
not
the Federation.
Not to be confused with being square. We're too hip to be square, right?
Yeah, you're both too hip to be square.
Which, by saying that, it shows how square I truly am. So you're welcome. Anyway, well, thanks for having me, Ted.
Oh, and thanks for coming. Thanks for being
totally
here.
Thank you, Ted, for having me.
Good time. All right. So that's going to wrap it up for this week. And
everybody
should have a an easy fast on Tish B'Av coming up. And have a good Shabbos. And we will be back next week.
Okay.
Thank you, Ted.
See ya.